Welcome to this seminar for the Hellenic Observatory this evening. It's my great pleasure to welcome our speaker, Dr. Lambrini Lori. Can I just rewind the video there? It's my great pleasure to welcome Lambrini Lori. She is a lecturer at the University of Exeter. She's previously been a Leventis Fellow in Modern Greek Studies at CSOX at St. Anthony's in Oxford. And she's been a Marie Curie Fellow at Bournemouth University. She has a PhD in Paris, a BA from the University of Macedonia, an MA from Sciences Po, and an MA from Paris as well. We take particular note of the fact that she's been currently the principal investigator of a policy research project in the Observatory on low intensity violence in crisis with the youth. She has published extensively on the collection of parties in the far right, the House of Parties of Extremism, parties of the Radical Left, etc., etc. So it's a pleasure to hear her presentation online through the network based on the far right and the far left. And let me say, I'm delighted to see such a good audience on this evening when immediately afterwards, you know, both like me, you'll be wondering what on earth is going to happen in the British Parliament. At least we seem to be united as two countries in both about to have a vote of no confidence, which may bring us to the far right or the far left. It probably doesn't, but the far right or the far left in Greece, and we look forward to Lambrini's presentation. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Thank you very much for this invitation. It's my first time talking at the LG, and this is a great pleasure. I will be presenting my research in on the far right and the far left in Greece, and mainly the online components. So the first part of this presentation will be about online political networks, and then in the second part of the presentation, I hope to expand into the offline political realm. So the aim is to understand how political discussions take place inside social media. I will examine the so-called echo chamber thesis, which is one of the major theories about how political online political communication takes place. And for this, I will delve into the dynamics of political networks, and more precisely what happens inside, but also between the far right and the far left. And I will also examine the relation of the structure of the network with the discourse in those networks and the sentiment as it is presented by the text. So the case studies Greece, and Greece during the period of the Great Crisis, which we all know has been a period of great political intensity. And we examine three different periods of time between 2014 and 2016. And I say we because this is part of a bigger interdisciplinary project for which I cooperate with computer scientists from the University of Nicosia, Fadelis Arhagel and Yannis Katakis. So I will first present the research agenda, what the contribution of this research is, some aspects of the theoretical background, the interest for this case study, how we collected the data, how we have identified advocates, the research hypothesis, some findings which relate to those hypotheses, and I will try to wrap up with conclusions. So this research actually tries to answer to two different streams of literature. The one is about politics and the party system in times of crisis, and the second is about continuities and discontinuities between the online and the offline political world. So in times of a crisis, when there is a radicalization and a reshuffling in among the electorate and the party system, we have seen the edges of the party system to converge. And the question is, when does the center hold in times of intense crisis? When will the extremes merge, and when will they not merge? And in terms of comparing online and offline discussions, we will try to shed light on what is the role of online political discussions in public debate, what is the blueprint of offline political shifts online, and whether the far right is behaving similarly or differently to the far left online. So this paper tries to contribute both substantially and methodologically to the literature. In terms of some substance, we actually see which is the online blueprint of radicalization in times of crisis, and we try to see how the emerging divide during the period of the bailout in Greece is reflected in the online political world. But also, we bring into discussion the online polarization of a multi-party system, which is actually a lacuna in the literature, given that most of the studies that we have on online polarization are about the United States, which is a two-party system. And we examine two large sets of Twitter messages that we break into three time periods of time, which are relevant to our research. And this permits us to compare how the networks change over time, but also how particular individuals move from one network to the other. This also contributes to the method, because we have proposed a novel method to identify advocates and to assign them into the political networks depending on how they interact with other users. And we bring new measures of political cohesion, communication density, and network visualizations. So some notes about the theory. The discussion is about political homophily. So in contemporary democratic regimes, information, political information is reaching individuals through interpersonal communication, mass media, and the digital media. In interpersonal communication, people tend to be associated with like-minded individuals, and this reinforces their beliefs. Nonetheless, disagreement perseveres in low-density networks, which leave room for distant acquaintances. In mass media, individuals are exposed to more diverse information than in interpersonal communication. Nonetheless, they're not passive in the way that they receive this information. There is a selective exposure, and individuals are driven in media channels which match their beliefs, and they tend to seclude those channels with which they disagree. It is said that social media are the most ideological self-segregating means of communication because of their choice-enhancing capacities and the algorithms that permit, that show to individuals who they can follow. So about political networks, what is mainly said is that the discussions take place inside echo chambers, which are subgroups or of broad ideological homogeneity, and that among other parameters, ideological stances affect individual and group fragmentation. Of course, there is no convergence in the literature about the echo chamber thesis, and despite the fact that discussions can take place in more or homogeneous political networks, individuals are also exposed to other types of information, and the social media cannot totally filter out different viewpoints because individuals use them also for non-political reasons. So when we have a profile in social media, it's not only with political discussions that we interact, but with many other information. So information circulates on various divergent occasions, and we have a new discussion in the literature which stems from political psychology, and the scientists have said that we should also examine the level of openness of an individual and the political interest, and also the nexus between the online and the offline world. So nothing is very, very much, let's say, defined, but we have research on a comparative level. Jonathan Bright has conducted research on party networks where in 55, I think, political networks in 19 countries, he compares individuals, how they interact with each other in group diets and in side groups with more members. And he is the one who actually has mostly shown through comparison that echo chambers are most likely formed at the extreme ends of the ideological scale. And he shows that echo chambers are, that powers on the edges of the party system interact less with the other political networks, and that echo chamberness is higher in those levels of the party system. Of course, many other parameters play a role in periods of crisis, like radicalization and how it takes place. So many things to consider. Now, what is the interest about Greece? As we all know, Greece has faced an emblematic crisis since 2010. Radicalization, volatility, and polarization has been immense during all those years. This has brought the collapse of the two-party system in the elections of May 2012. Here you can see the two-party system that was in place from the 1990s until 2009. Those were the elections where from a centripetal democracy, Greece moved to a centrifugal democracy. And then 1 month later, a new polarization between Syriza and New Democracy arose, which actually it is reinforcing ever since. So during this period, we have seen the meteoric rise of existing extremist parties like Golden Dawn and radical parties like Syriza, but also new splinter parties, mainly radical, like Popular Unity, Independent Greeks, etc. We believe that the Greek case is a unique case, not only because it is a country which has actually, as a third party, a neo-Nazi party in parliament, but also because during this period that we examined the online political discussions, in parliament we had a government of the, a coalition government of the far right and the far left. And this makes it particularly interesting to see how this is reflected online. And as I have said, we use data from the Greek Twitter. You know, we know that this is an open, easy, and user-friendly platform. We use language and network mining techniques, and we try to define political networks. But I see the Greek case as a particularly interesting as well from for another element, which is the crisis that has taken place in the media landscape during those years. From the typology of Halina and Mancini, we know that Greece is a polarized, pluralist media system. The levels of trust in the media have been very low since the 2000s, but they have been decreasing ever since. In 2015, I'm sure you remember in the summer of 2015 how the media have discussed about the referendum and the yes and no, and how the polarization has been since then. So in another paper that we had, we used data from the 2007 Reuters Institute Digital News Report, where we see that Greece is the only country that the trust in the news media is very, very low, and much lower than the trust in social media. So there is a disruption in Greek media habits that we don't see in other countries, and Greek citizens don't trust the traditional media or mass media at all. So some information about the data. We examined three sets of Twitter messages in three periods. The first period is from November 2014 to January 2015. This is a period which has been very intense because we have the stay in the election for the President of the Republic, which led to an early election in January 2015 and the victory of Syriza. The second period is from July 2015 to September 2015, where the referendum took place, several votes in Parliament for the bailout agreement. We had the splits in political parties, and this period finished with the snap election where Syriza won again in September 2015. The third period is from March 2016 to May 2016. Here we don't have elections, but the main event has been the refugee crisis and the votes of austerity measures in the parliament. So we compare two periods of electoral politics with one period of routinized politics. So here you can see the total number of unfiltered tweets that we collected, and then you can see the numbers of Twitter of advocates that we found. So in the first period we collected 5.51 million tweets, and in the second and the third 6.6. And from this, we then I will explain how we constructed the network. You can see that the confirmed advocates per period under study for the first period are almost 84,000, the second 161, and the third 16,000.
Could you perhaps just clarify the difference between a potential advocate and a confirmed advocate?
Yes. I will do this exactly now. So,
the rapport is fantastic.
So, we first had to construct the list of confirmed advocates. I had as first members all the official candidates of the political parties that had a Twitter account. So I took all the lists of the parties and I found their Twitter accounts. And then I reconstructed the potential advocates list, where we have placed all the users that have been retweeted at least once by the political candidates of the parties. Now, for those potential advocates to be considered as confirmed advocates, they had to be retweeted by a political candidate back. So there is a double condition that a party candidate retweets the potential advocate, but also that this potential advocate retweets an advocate of the political party. And then what we did is that we have repeated this process until no more confirmed advocates were found. The difference between the first loop and then the loops that followed is that for a potential advocate to be considered as a confirmed advocate, she had to be retweeted back by any member of the confirmed advocates and not only of the official candidates of the party, since the ones who followed are already confirmed advocates. And then manually we checked those lists to see whether they were correct, and in most of the times they have been very much clear that they belong to those party networks. So here you can see the confirmed advocates extracted for each political party. You can see that there is a very big variation between the percentages of candidates of political parties that have it in their account. So in Kukwe, the Communist Party, only 1.45% of candidates have it in their account, whereas in New Democracy, almost 57% have a Twitter account. The other thing that is interesting here is that the list of confirmed advocates from the first to the second period changes a lot, which means that those networks are not static, that they have changed over this period of time. Now, I will present our hypothesis. So in line with the echo chamber thesis, we expect to find strong levels of cohesion on the edges of the political system. And as a second hypothesis, we expect to find, because of the emerging divides during the period of the crisis, we expect to find levels of interaction of radical actors which do not only reflect the traditional ideological proximity, but also coalitions formed around the emerging divides. The third hypothesis is about the hierarchy inside the political, those political party networks, and driven by a knowledge and theory that we have about the organizational differences on the far right and the far left, we expect that far right networks will display higher level of internal cohesion, but lower levels of internal interaction than far left communities. And last but not least, the intensity of the sentiments is expected to be stronger in extremist and radical political networks. So I will start now presenting the findings. In order to measure the echo chambers of the party networks, we have introduced the measure of internal cohesion, which is the proportion of interaction that targets the members of a same party network. And we have divided this in replies and in retweets. The assumption is that retweets actually reflect endorsement or agreement, whereas replies disagreement or interaction, discussion. So each political, each color is a different political party, and we have ordered political parties from the far left to far right. So you can see Kukueda, Syria, Lai, Syriza, Pasok, Potamium, Democracy, Independent Greece, and Golden Dawn. And the three different points are the three different points in time. So the first observation is that internal cohesion is greater in the retweets than in the replies, which follows our assumption that users make different use of those functions on Twitter, and they are in line with our assumption that retweets show agreement or endorsement. The second thing that we can see is that the edges of the party system display higher levels of internal cohesion in both cases. So Kukue and the Golden Dawn, they have the higher levels of internal cohesion. The second observation is that along those party networks, from the first to the second era, we can see that cohesion diminishes. So when polarization increased from the first period of study to the second, the cohesion of those party networks has decreased, which means actually that not only the edges display high levels of cohesion, which means that the echo chamber thesis is confirmed. But at the same time, we can see that over time those networks are not static and that they change with polarization. So polarization diminishes internal cohesion. Here we examine the second hypothesis by graphically representing the tweets in the three periods of time. So we have, in order to examine the second hypothesis, which was whether we have alliances over new divisions, we have introduced the measures of density and interactivity. In density, we see how active the network has been, and interactivity, we see which is the level of diffusion of messages from certain prominent figures to of each network to other users. So we see that from the first period to the second, when polarization increased, the density increased as well, whereas interactivity stayed the same in the three periods of time. It even decreased slightly from the first to the second. And this is very clearly shown also in the three clouds. So you can see that it gets denser from the first, the second, and the third period. So discussions are much more intense and much bigger in density. But also you can see that there are two, different sub areas in the three periods. So this is the first period, and in the sub-area A, you can see the advocates of PASOK, POTAMI, and New Democracy, so the pro-bailout, who are mixed. They don't form distinct, let's say, spaces. And in the B sub-area, you can see the far left with the orange and red colors, and the far right, who are closer together than the sub-area A, but still they're quite distinct. In the second period, the polarization has moved the two sub-areas to bigger distance, but the density of discussions is bigger. Here you can still see the pro-bailout parties, and here you can see the anti-bailout political party networks, which now are no longer distinct, they have merged closer. So you can see that political discussions are quite merged in the second period. And in the third, we can see that the, more or less the picture is the same. The only thing that changes is that Golden Dawn moves away from the pro-bailout, the anti-bailout political networks, and this we have assumed that is related to the refugee crisis during the period. So what we can overall say from this graph is that the networks became from party-oriented in this first period. They became issue-oriented, so here we can see parties more in more distinct colors, whereas here they have merged in the sub-area A and B. And what we see also is that polarization increased the density of discussions but reduced the interactivity. So in order to check what was were the discussions about, so the agenda of in those three different periods, we used the method topic modeling, which is a probabilistic method that assigns topics in large corpuses of text. In our case, the text are the tweets. And then it counts the distribution of those topics in the different party networks. So for our case, the algorithm accounted as optimal 7 topics in the period under study. And we can see that certain topics are owed by certain political spaces, whereas in the second period, we can see that there is a common ground shared between the far right and the far left, and this was the opposition to Germany, the IMF, bailout, and the euro. In the third period, the refugee crisis divides the two extremes with distinct framing. So polarization depends on the agenda and is a function of its framing. So we can say that, as with the first hypothesis, tentatively it was confirmed in the second as well. Here you can see the way that discussions have taken place, the structure of the network inside the far left, the center, and the far right. And I have only, I will only show you what happens in the second period. Here are the replies inside the networks. And overall, you can see that the center is much more dense and mixed, whereas the far left and the far right, they're more fragmented. Even more so on the far right, so this is Golden Dawn, and these are independent peaks advocates. They're only connected through some prominent opinion leaders who function as bridges, as we say in social network analysis. So there is fragmentation on the edges of the party networks, and there is interactivity in the center. And ideology correlates with structure, the structure of internal communication, at least in terms as it is visualized here. But we have counted the density and the interactivity in order to see whether it is correct. And what we see here is that polarization has increased the density over time. So for the far left, from 584, it increased to 1447, and then, okay, it polarization doesn't change here, so we're interested to from the first to the second period, whereas interactivity has decreased or stayed very low in general. This is not the case for the far right, which actually has stayed the same, and it's, yes, so overall the communication doesn't show here to be hierarchical as it was expected by the hypothesis, so the third hypothesis is not confirmed. And then we have tried to see the sentiment in the three periods of time by using opinion mining techniques, and more specifically a dictionary that is called the DAFTA, and the computer scientists have fabricated. It counts the sentiment per tweet by subtracting the negative opinion words from the positive opinion words, and then the same is done per day. So we have the overall sentiment per day, and what we see here is that there is a big polarity in the first period, but in the second period there is a big activity during July, as we have expected, mainly because of the discussions in parliament. And in general, when we see the absolute numbers and on the far right and the far left, we've had more negative sentiment than in the center, but the overall sentiment has been positive. So I will now try to wrap up the conclusions. As we've seen in times of crisis, we have political reshuffling and realignment, which is not only happening in the offline political world. The online political networks in this research are seen as porous. They're neither static nor solid. And political actors consider this turbulence and volatility as structures of political opportunity in order to gain visibility, leverage, and issue ownership. What we've seen in case of radical and extremist actors is that even though their introvertness is higher compared to moderate networks, they tend to lose levels of cohesion when polarization increases. We have also been able to see how emerging divisions related to the crisis affected the structure of the networks and facilitated the convergence between the edges of the political networks, and how those networks have evolved from party-oriented to being issue-oriented. And we can say that when the electoral competition is not driven by the left-right division, the online world, so the Twitter, the social platform, has absorbed the new cleavage. But also the key here is the political agenda to the dynamics that develop between the extremes, and that polarization and radicalization can lead to convergence between the far right and the far left against the center. But whether the extremes will merge depends on issue framing and the political agenda. So when sovereignty, Europe, and austerity are on the agenda, this facilitates convergence, whereas immigration drives a wedge between them. And we could expand this today, maybe, and say that also the Macedonian question maybe could drive a wedge between them, as if this is correct for the online world, what we see today in politics. And the new media, of course, facilitate this process. And when we delve into the structure of the network and the sentiment, we've seen that within the far right and the far left, there were no significant differences found.